May 29, 2022. This is The Better Life. I'm your host, Timothy Lawson. Living a better life means dealing with the swings of late game drama. I had the Bills second half. I had the Bills plus 3.5 live in game. And with 13 seconds left to go in that game, I thought both were going to get home. Neither of them did. And well, so is betting, I suppose. Fortunately, I got a bit of that back. I got all of that back and then some, with Ash Barty winning the Australian Open on the women's side. So just a week later, able to recoup losses from a dramatic NFL Sunday. But a good day of football, I think we would all agree. This week on the show, Jason Weingarten from the Wide World of Weingarten. You've seen him on VEASAN. You've heard him on Gill shows. I've been following him for quite some time and was surprised when I saw him on my Twitter feed as I was thinking about someone to have on the show. Realized, oh, I've never invited Jason. Let me do that now. And so here he is. We talk sports betting, of course. We talk dealing with outs, preserving them. We talk about lessons learned, hurdles overcome, stuff like that. Great interview. I think you're going to enjoy it. Record with Jason Weingarten from your at Spreadopedia, because at one point you had a thing called Spreadopedia, and we'll get to that. But you do spots on VEASAN and elsewhere. You have your own podcast now. Jason, welcome to The Better Life.
Thank you for having me.
Jason, we start all these interviews with the same question. What was your first exposure to gambling, as early as you can remember?
You sent that to me before. I had to think about it. How far back? I mean, I played blackjack for the first time at a casino. I was like 19. Played poker before that a little bit in high school with friends and stuff. Nothing serious. I wasn't very good. I don't think I knew. Like, I knew sports betting in high school, but I didn't really seriously dabble in it until I got to college. But mostly, like, my first sports betting experience that I could really tell stories about would probably just be hanging out with my roommate in college, and we'd drink, like, you know, natural ice or whatever, and bet second half, you know, totals and second half lines, and wouldn't do very well. We had no idea what we were doing, and we were like parlaying them probably, but that's what happens when you drink natural ice and gamble on, you know, and when you're 19 or 21 or however old we were. But yeah, I'd say that was probably my first experience or so with the sports gambling seriously. Not seriously, because that come much later, but
yeah,
that'd be the first experience, I guess.
Okay. I can recall early days when I was of a similar age at the barracks in Marine Corps Air Base Jacksonville, betting with Bovada.
Oh yeah,
laying the 14.5 with New England, thinking there's no way the Patriots don't win by more than two touchdowns, right? They're so good. I keep trying to measure my progress as a sports bettor, and then when I look that far back, I'm like, oh man, that is a far cry from who I am now. So that always makes me feel better. So when did you start actually taking it serious then? So if you're doing it for fun with your friends at 19, when do you start being like, you know what, I kind of want to do this more seriously?
I mean, at that point, I went to Irvine, UC Irvine, and I'd moved to Newport Beach, and I lived at the beach with a bunch of my friends. So the incentive to go to class was slowly melting away as I continued to live at the beach. And I started realizing there was a lot more to gamble on than just football or college football or whatever. There's always stuff going on. There was soccer all day. There was Champions League. There was Europa League. I was like, wait, there's just like this stuff on a Wednesday at like 9 a.m. And then there's more games at noon. And I could bet hundreds of dollars on each one of them. Like, you know, why am I going to class? What do I gotta go to class for? Because I quickly did the math. I figured out what I had to bet and how much I would have to make to make it, you know, worthwhile. And I was like, wow, like, I already live at the beach. Well, what else I gotta do?
Right.
So I started doing that, and obviously I was completely unsuccessful for several years, because you just can't make money like that without knowing anything or having any experience. So it took me a while. I think I actually met you at one of the Sloan conferences early on.
Yes.
I was working on some football stuff at the time. I got into football gambling more seriously for a couple of years before I got back into baseball. So I did football for a while first, you know, more seriously. And I did all right. It wasn't anything spectacular. Then I got sick. I had chicken pox. I was out for like a month, had a bunch of time to do baseball stuff, and I ended up getting back into baseball, and I ended up doing particularly well for a couple seasons. It's been pretty good since then. So I've been doing baseball full time since, I don't remember exactly, but it's been a while.
I'm almost surprised that you remember meeting me, because I don't know if I'd started the better life then. What do you just recognize me? Is that the...
Yeah, you were with Gil. You were hanging out with Gil. I was hanging out with Gil.
I didn't know
a ton of people back then.
Where'd we go? We went to some restaurant. You got a lobster roll. Don't ask me
why. We went to
that.
The probably legal seafood or something.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Gotta go there when you go to Boston.
Right. Yeah, I do remember that. So when did you, by the way, my audience knows that I love that you mentioned soccer there, because that is one of my biggest cases for soccer. I'm primarily a soccer bettor, and my biggest case for it is like every day there's something to bet on. Like if you, and you don't really need to have, you know, with the NFL, it's so efficient. You have to find your right angles, all that sort of stuff. With soccer, like you just sort of have to have a general beat to know on like the leagues or the teams, or even just the circumstance of like the leagues that week to be able to find a spot, position. So
I always started with Europa League, looking at who owned what team, and like finding like what giant Russian conglomerate owned this team. Like, oh, well, they're not going to lose to this little rinky dink team. Like, and it would never really work out, but I would just go with the team that was owned with the most evil owner.
Well, that's, you know, there's in some parts of FIFA, that's not a horrible way to go. When did you realize that you were good? Like, did you ever have like this aha moment where you're, you know, where it wasn't just, oh, I make more money than I lose money? Was there any a part of the process where you're like, oh man, I'm actually pretty good at this?
When other people like started offering to pay me to do stuff, and when they actually paid me, and I, cause when first, like, you know, when you meet people and they're like, oh yeah, like I'll pay you to do like baseball props, or I'll pay you to handicap something. And you're like, okay, sure, whatever. Like, and you make them a lot of money and they actually send it to you. And the first time that happens, you're like, wow, like, that's unbelievable. I thought I had to do all this work, and you know, someone just sent me money, and you know, that's awesome. So I it was more people telling me, I guess, because I always knew I was had the capability to succeed, but it's always hard because you're undercapitalized when you start. You don't know what you're doing. You don't know anybody. You don't know, you don't have experience. You don't know how to read a Don Best screen. You don't know how to shop outs. Like, you just don't, until somebody teaches you a lot of the stuff, you might know how to, you know, oh, this soccer team's going to win. But if all you have is Bovada, you know, are you going to make money if you're laying like minus 200 on a game that Pinnacle has minus 160? Like, right. Eventually over time, you learn stuff like that. You learn, you're betting the wrong things at the wrong places. So I mean, it really took other people helping me get to the higher levels and teaching me the things that I didn't know. Cause anybody can learn how to pick winners. Essentially, you know, you can build a model, you can get good at whatever, but you really need to learn how to understand the ecosystem and navigate it.
Yeah. So like, as you're learning this stuff, did you like, where did you go for advice? Like, did you have any sort of guidance, whether it just be content or people you knew or whatever it may be, on filling the gaps or edging you forward on this stuff as you're learning it in real time?
I have like some friends that I contemporaries that I talk to about different things, but a lot of times that's one of the hardest parts is, You just have to do stuff as opposed to talk about it. And you don't tell people what you're doing. You just do it. And gambling is it's sort of like the way I describe it. It's like making sausage in a lot of ways. It's the process might not be very pretty, but people like the end result and it's tasty, you know, but yeah. Nobody wants to see you make it. No one wants to talk about how you made it. So, you know, a lot of the stuff I have probably 5 or 10 people that I converse with about various different gambling things daily or frequently, but otherwise you got to go out there and do stuff. You know, you got to basically make your own way essentially. And you're either doing it on yourself or you're following other people.
When people watch you on VSiN, you got, you and your computer, your microphone, your bookshelves behind you, just the way that you sort of present yourself, like you come across as someone who is just like immersed in this all day, every day. Is that reality or is it just because that's the way we take you in? That's how we see it.
Yes. Yes. And no. So actually Rufus pointed out something, Rufus Peabody, on his podcast recently that I thought was really insightful. But that's that if you work half as hard, you don't make half as much money. You know, you lose all your money if you work half as hard at gambling. So gambling's really kind of the kind of thing that you have to be consumed 100%, 110% by to be successful. If you're going to slack off, you're going to miss a number, you're going to miss something. And, you know, like with futures, with like baseball futures over a long season, if you slack off, and for example, Bryce Harper, I just totally overlooked him when he was like 30-1 in the second half. I was like, oh, he's not going to win. And then he just all of a sudden his odds dropped. And I, you know, like when you slack off, you end up with holes in your portfolio and things, you know, don't work out. So yes, you know, you have to be consumed to be successful, but you have to decide when to be consumed. So I tend to think, you know, baseball season for me starts, you know, a couple of weeks before spring training, I get immersed back in baseball, and then I'm working really, really hard all baseball season. You don't get very many days off. You're constantly working on the next day and following up on pitching news and, you know, all sorts of stuff constantly going on with baseball. But the season's so long, with spring training started in March and the World Series going almost into the beginning of November. I go into football season and I still do college football and I do NFL because I like it. And I do golf year round because I like it too. And I think it's a way to make a lot of money. But by the end of the year, when the NFL playoffs come around, like where we are now, post bowl season, I get a lot more time off in the January, February window, for the Super Bowl, the week after the Super Bowl, because football is only 1-2 days a week right now. There's only single primetime games. We don't have any slates where you're handicapping 5-6 games at once, doing second halves, doing props. You're just doing single games, standalone games. So it's less of a, you know, having your mind in 17 different places. And as I've gotten older, stuff like the NBA and college basketball, I could still bet recreationally, but I don't bet a ton on it anymore because I never really won on it. I do futures, but like it's not worth my time to spend Wednesday or Thursday in January handicapping, you know, college basketball anymore for $500 a game or $1,000 a game. And I don't want to do it for more money. You know, I just don't want to be invested for a lot of money in something I don't care about. So my goal is, you know, to work really hard for baseball season so I can do whatever I want the rest of the time. That's worked out so far. You know, the last couple of seasons have been incredibly successful with futures and everything, you know, and even regular betting has been good. So, you know, it gives me opportunities to have a flexible schedule and take mornings off and work on other things. And, you know, got 2 dogs now, so those take time.
Yeah. I saw the photo of the new puppers.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah. Baseball is your focus. That is priority number one. And then a couple things sort of trail behind if there's time and sort of sounds like even just select markets.
Yeah. I mean, baseball is a big thing. Baseball, overshadows everything else just because the volume is so massive. The season compared to the NFL. The difference also is, you know, you can bet $1 million on an NFL game. And it's, I guess theoretically it's not impossible to bet like $1 million on like, you know, a Tuesday night baseball game or something, but that's impractical. It's not, that's not how it works. At least not for me, at least not at the levels I'm aware of. I'm sure there's, you know, nosebleed Asian betting levels where they're like, oh, sure, we can get you $1 million down on this, but that's not my world. So, I mean, you can play NFL games for $50,000, $100,000, no problem. I don't bet that big. I don't think it would be fun for me anymore if I was betting that size, but, yeah, baseball takes up a lot of it. I do golf year round. I enjoy the golf betting. And what interests me about golf is that even if you're only able to get down $100 limits, $250 limits, $500 limits on futures, if you have books, like it's not just the PGA Tour, you have a PGA Tour, you have Euro, you have the Senior Tour, Corn Ferry, Asia, Japan, South Africa. That's seven tours off the top of my head. I'm sure there's one or two others that I'm missing, but in any given week, you can have, oh, LPGA, obviously the women's, you know, league, but any given week, you can have four or five tournaments in season, a good high season, you know, week, and the odds pay the same, you know, hitting a 50-1 guy on the Asian Tour, on the Corn Ferry Tour is just like hitting a 50-1 on the PGA Tour. And the limits, even if you're saying, well, it's $100 limit, it's $200 limit. Most people I know are really happy when they win $100 at 50-1. Like it's only on Twitter that 150, you know, $100 at 50-1 is not big enough. You know, it's plenty big enough when you win it. Let me tell you, it's, you know, like I still appreciate winning $500 bets all the time. Like it adds up quickly. And it doesn't matter if it's a small market. It's people shit on small markets. I don't get it. It's like, okay, so you can't get down $20,000. You can't get down 10. I don't want to get down to $10,000. I want to get down $500. I'm happy winning 5-1. It you know, yeah. It adds up.
Gambling Twitter could be an entire pod, like a serial podcast series all on its own, right? Just the discussion around how people behave, how people interact with each other, the hypocrisies from one person to the next and within certain groups and stuff. You know, people acting whenever, you know, someone posts about like, oh, I hit this at this number, it's like, oh, it's too bad you have, or you only bet this much. Hey, you didn't bet it, right? Why do you care? Right? Like if it was so clearly meant to have more money on it, where's your ticket? That's part of how I feel about how people respond to bet size and stuff. I mean, I got friends that bet $10 and I'm just as excited for them when they win as I am when I hit something 10 times as big, right? Spreadopedia was a project that you had being this like spread database of spreads. Where is it? And is it just tucked away like the Ark of the Covenant and never to be seen again? Or what happened to that project?
Pretty much. Yeah, it was a really cool database. It was just slightly ahead of the PAPSA repeal, ahead of its time. Had we held on a little bit longer, done things a little bit differently, whatever, we probably would have gotten rolled up into one of these bigger projects.
Yeah.
But it didn't happen. And it's probably never coming back. I there are occasions when I'm like doing podcast stuff and like the playoffs come around, you know, like the first round of the playoffs, like the Steelers were such a big underdog that I was like, man, I really wish I had the database right now just so I could run a query on wildcard games and see where this falls in terms of, you know, biggest spread in wildcard history, because I'm pretty sure it's the biggest one, if not. And it was the biggest, I'm pretty sure. But I don't have my own database to do that anymore. And I don't, I think, you know, when I got into gambling and I was younger, I was coming out of college, I thought maybe that there was more with trends than there is. And there is value. There absolutely is value, but it's in value in helping. It's valuable in helping you sort of learn critical thinking in the NFL and understand situations better, as opposed to like, you know, oh, we have to bet this game. But, you know, like I learned a lot about the double digit underdogs and what situations, you know, are blind essentially betting on double digit underdogs. And, you know, for example, like you could look at data into the season and see that like, you know, teams that are 0-4 against the spread and the fifth game of the season are probably a really good bet because they've lost four games against the spread. Eventually, you're going to win a game against the spread. The lines are going to keep, you know, getting inflated essentially till you win, sort of thing. You see that a lot, you know, double digit dogs like the Jaguars last week of the season. I was like, this spread is way too high. Like, I don't care what anybody says, how bad the Jaguars are. Like, unless you think they're actually absolutely going to no show at home, you know, always take 14 points on a dog at home in an NFL game. You know, I don't even need a database to tell me take 14 points at a home team. Like, it's not fun to watch a lot of the times. A lot of times you're going to lose, but you know, like you learn a lot about situational betting. I did at least, but I don't necessarily think you're going to win money blindly betting trends. Not in this day and age. You know, maybe in 1992 you were, if you know, you had multiple outs and they had different numbers, but not working today.
When do you think a trend becomes data? Right. And I guess what I mean by that is how much of an example, how much does a team show you who they are through a quote unquote trend?
A trend doesn't necessarily have to be team specific. Like, but once something, it's sort of the thing that once you sort of notice something, it's probably going to stop happening. Like zigzag theory in the NBA playoffs, whatever, was a big one. Or the first half, remember the home team in the playoffs first half, the lines finally started getting adjusted for the underdogs or whatever.
Right.
Till they were just totally out of whack with the full game spreads. Like when you start noticing very obvious stuff, they don't stay mispriced for long, you know? So when a trend sort of becomes data is about the same point where it stops being mispriced when the market has caught up to whatever it is.
What do you enjoy about betting other than the money?
I like winning.
Yeah. I mean, just so you like winning.
I like Tiger Woods is my, okay, like one of my favorite athletes because he just likes to win.
Yeah.
It's just about winning for him. And I totally understand that. Like he just wants to be the best. And I don't necessarily want to be the best because I don't really like consider myself competing with other gamblers because, you know, you realize that there's always going to be other people winning more than you or making more money than you, or, you know, like you're going to be jealous of a bet somebody else had. I wish I bet Kendall Blanton to score the first touchdown in the Rams game. Yes. I didn't even think about it. Like I bet that a couple weeks ago, but no, you know, like, so someone hit an 80-1 and you could either get jealous of it or you could worry about your own betting. I mean, I just like winning. It's fun to win. It's fun when you get texts from bookies telling you they're cutting you off because you won too much. Like, You just know you beat them. You beat them fair and square. They just don't want you to play anymore because they know they're not going to win, and feels good. I assume Tiger Woods has a similar feeling when he looks over at a golfer and knows that this guy, you know, he's trained all his life and he's going to hit his best shot and it's not going to matter because he's Tiger Woods and he's just going to hit a better one. Like, feels good when you can, you know, gamble like that, but it's a tightrope because, you know, you're always one punch away from, you know, getting your ass kicked, and you know, there's always a swift beating around the corner for you know, being too sure of yourself and gambling.
Yeah. What's one of the bigger lessons you had to learn, or you had a tougher time learning when it came to gambling? An example being maybe over investing into a line that you liked a lot.
Well, I mean, I think everybody learns a lesson sooner or later with over investing. You know, you like the game and you bet it far, you know, you're going to lose. It happens to everybody. It's not so much a lesson, but I think the hardest thing I learned is you can win a lot of money. You know, you can win $5,000, $10,000 on something on a Monday or a Tuesday, and you're not going to sit on it and cash it out at the settle. Right. All you have to do is nothing. I like telling people that, like, all you had to do was sit around for the next 5 days and watch movies and do whatever you wanted. And someone was going to give you a fat envelope full of cash, but instead you had to find a fucking NBA game and you bet it. And then you started losing. So you doubled down on the second half. And then you found some other shit that you don't normally bet. And you bet that too. And, you know, now you're in three games for $500 each that you wouldn't normally bet. And your $10,000 is $8,000. And all of a sudden your $8,000 is $6,000 on Thursday. And it's not even an NFL yet. And, you know, you bet the Bills. So, you know, your $6,000 is now $3,000. And all you had to do was nothing.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, you're probably not even going to collect that three. You're just going to roll it and lose it the next week. So that's, you know, somewhat from experience, obviously, is you learn after a while, you either are, you know, you're just being an idiot with money, basically, like collect the money and move on. Sort of, you either learn how to collect money and be successful, or you just keep gambling and you're eventually going to lose it. So, you know, understanding how to actually get the money out and you know, kind of get the wheels spinning is one of the harder things that people don't necessarily grasp when they're moving from, you know, betting into Bovada or five dimes to seriously betting every day, day in, day out.
That is definitely something that I've experienced. I've heard other people talk about similar struggles in, you know, I think it's multifaceted too, right? It's your sports betting's what you do. It is the hobby. It is the quote unquote job. And so, you know, why would you take the rest of the week off, right? There's more to be done. And it's difficult, even if you had the intent of being like, you know what, I'm just going to sit on this 10K. And then you start looking at lines. You're like, but I really like that game.
Yeah, right? you're like, I'm going to miss out on some good stuff. And
yeah,
it works both ways, because I have sat stuff out and I've regretted it. And I have not sat stuff out and I've made more money. But I found that you just, unless you could you have to have an idea of what you're trying to win to know what, you know, what you're trying to do. Otherwise, you're just kind of chasing a number on a screen and you're never going to be content with what the number says. And yeah, people can't really get a grip and say, like, you know, I'm winning $2,000 a week consistently. And you can't kind of calculate that over a year and be like, well, you know, you're pulling $100,000 out of this account a year off this guy. You're not happy with that. I mean, most people are happy, you know, beating bookies out of $100,000 a year. And if you could do that with one guy, you could do it with three guys, you could do it with five guys. It's a lot of money.
Yep.
But most people can't think like that. Most people just kind of see, oh, I'm up $2,000 this week. I gotta bet the Chiefs game now. And it's like, well, do you have a side you like on the Chiefs? No, but it's, you know, it's pick it. It's -1 at kick. I gotta bet something.
Where that scenario has bitten me in the past, and I still sort of have to talk myself when I'm in that, when those situations, is, you know, being up Monday, Tuesday, and then Wednesday, Thursday down a bit, and then going into the weekend sort of striving for that high watermark again, right? Like it's if I'm up, let's just say 10K, and it's 5,000 by the weekend. In a normal circumstance, if I'm up 5K by the weekend, I'd be perfectly satisfied. I might even just go for a hike for the weekend. I might be that person who's like, you know what, I don't need to bet on the NFL this weekend. But because that 5,000 originally was 10, I'm motivated to want to. Isn't it funny how you don't like a game until you need it?
Yeah, it's. I mean, I think it just takes a lot of experience to eventually realize, well, I'm not going to do that again.
Yeah.
You know, you learn from the stupid stuff you do and the mistakes you make.
Right.
And gambling mistakes are expensive.
Yeah, for sure. How has this impacted or benefited other parts of your life? I mean, there's a lot of transferable skills in market evaluation, et cetera. How has this experience and education you've gotten in becoming good at sports betting impacted the way you do other things in your life?
I think a lot of gambling, a lot of sports gambling, is spotting bullshit. So you learn to just sort of see like what doesn't add up and what's not missing, you know, what's missing from the picture. And it helps you when it carries over to other stuff and you're like, well, this doesn't make sense. Like this company can't be making the money they say they are, you know, the way they say they are. I've never heard of this product. I've never seen, you know, this, that just you, you're more skeptical of stuff. And I think it helps you kind of just cut through just low level crap. Like you could just tell when someone's full of shit just right off the bat. And if you can't, you're probably not a good gambler. Or they're a very good liar.
Yeah. You know, you admitted, you know, great quote from Rufus, if you do this halfway, you don't just make half the money. And how that sort of you have to be into this sort of all the time. Something that I don't think gets talked about enough in this community is how when you are that person that is fully committed, and how it often means having to have one eye on an odd screen sort of at all times, whatever, how that impacts personal and social life. Have you noticed any impacts? What sort of sacrifices have you had to make in your life because, you know, not being around to take advantage of situations means a hit to the bottom line?
Yeah. I mean, there's always going to be trade-offs and stuff. Like you know what you want to, like what you want to be around for and what you're willing to miss, like what games are important and what aren't. But I find mostly it's stuff like randomly, like if like I've made a lot of money in random situations with like live golf betting, for example, that I've been like, well, if I was not around and doing something, I couldn't pick this number off on a Wednesday night when something happened in Dubai at 1 a.m. or at 11 p.m. or whatever, like I wouldn't have made all this money. So, you know, you kind of just have to decide what you're willing, like where you want to be and what you want to do. And obviously, like there's now mobile betting, and iPhones have changed a lot with how you can bet and where you can bet from. Although I do find that I do much better work from a computer as opposed to like betting stuff from my phone. And they want you to bet stuff from your phone, obviously, so you're making worse bets and have less stuff in front of you, and you're not thinking things through. But I mean, like me personally, and I'm sure you know, it's more of a question you got to ask like the people around you how it affects them, because
yeah.
I'd just be like, well, I mean, I still get to do whatever I want, whenever I want. They'd be like, well, you missed this, this, and this. And I'd just be like, well, that was that game and I had that. And so, you know, it's a trade-off for sure. But, you know, like I still made it to the wild card game last weekend. We'll go to the NFC Championship game next week or this week, I guess. Try to make it out like to sporting events I want to see. I don't, you know, I prefer this stuff I do want to just watch on TV, sports-wise, but I do find that it just makes some sports stuff like, you know, like, do I want to go to a Rams game on an NFL Sunday where I know I'm going to miss half of the other games and sit right in the car and, you know, be looking at my phone, finding out what's happening the whole time. So sometimes you do just, you're like, yeah, I'd rather just stay at home and sit in front of the computer all day gambling than whatever it is you want to do socially. But you have to have that kind of personality too. Like, there's times I'd prefer to sit at home and just gamble in front of a computer than go out and do shit. So it works out.
Yeah. Is there anything outside of gambling, or is there anything that's not gambling that you do that positively impacts your gambling? Like, is there any other, like, any other hobby that you have where you like see like a crossover in thought process, anything like that?
I mean, I think reading lots of books helps you sort of become a better critical thinker, and being a better critical thinker helps you with gambling, but not necessarily like crossover and reading, you know, a biography of a guy from the French and Indian Wars with gambling. But, you know, you pick up stuff from books and they help you kind of mold the way you think. But no, I mean, I learned a lot from trading stocks and options. I don't trade options with regularity, but I think there's a lot if you understand the theory and mathematics of options trading. I think there's a lot that can sort of be applied to different gambling markets, especially like live golf. I've always thought live golf trading sort of reminded me of an options market, and it sort of molds a lot of the way I trade certain live markets. But other than that, like, no, I mean, I try to have hobbies and do stuff that aren't related to gambling when I'm not gambling, which not a lot of time in between. So
yeah. Do you get do you get excited for this stuff still? Like when baseball, like when first pitch on day one, does that excite you or does it become like this daunting task?
I was really excited for the Chiefs and not Chiefs, the Chargers Raiders week 18 game. Like I was the idea of a tie was like, I spent all week, like, this is the only thing I've ever wanted to see. And, you know, I was as a fan, like I like that as, you know, like the division, this last round of the playoffs, like you can appreciate it as a football fan. Like, you know, as a person, you're like, this sucks for the Bills. They were so close to winning, you know, more than a better, like it also sucks for the Bills bettors who lost the 2.5s and everything on and overtime. But yeah, I mean, I think gambling does kind of kill a lot of the excitement. And if you do it, and if you do it long enough, it'll make you slightly bitter about certain things. And baseball in particular, like the thing you're like, well, do I care about opening day? No, not really, because I don't like MLB that much. Like MLB sucks. The commissioner sucks. Like they constantly just try to make the game as unfun as possible. Just like, you ever watch like the Dominican clips I post when they're like dancing around the bases and everyone's like drinking coffee in the dugouts and partying? Like it's just a totally different scene. And it's not even like a complaint about them trying to sanitize the game or anything. It's just like, it's just so boring and the games are so long. Like as I get older, I get to this point where if a game's over like 3 hours and it's still going on, I'm just like, I don't even care about what I bet anymore. Can you guys just get this over with? Like right. I've lost interest in my own money is how boring some of these games can be with their length. So I totally get MLB's trying to figure out how do we get this game, make it interesting for the next generation, because sometimes it can barely hold my attention in the middle of the season. But no, I mean, I get excited for like random stupid things, you know, not necessarily opening day. You know, there's like just occasionally some random stupid big game out of the middle of nowhere. You know what it's like in soccer, like the African Cup of Nations. I was excited for that. I was betting all the unders the first like week. Like that's exciting to me, is when you get like a women's, you know, international basketball tournament and an under 20 tournament or an under 19 tournament, and Ireland's a 65 point underdog in 10 minute FIBA quarters in basketball. Like that's exciting to me because I want to know how you're going to beat, you know, how you're going to physically score on that many possessions in a 10 minute basketball game. Like stuff like that's exciting. You know, like I can find excitement in very, very stupid things in the gambling world.
Yeah. You know, you're in California, legal schemes aren't operating yet. But has the legalization had an effect on what's available to you otherwise? Like, have you noticed any differences in like, I imagine it was sort of business as usual for you without California going legal yet, but was there any impact to the other markets and what was available because of legalization and the spread across the U.S.?
You know, I think with the legalization in the adjoining states with California, it's interesting because they've created competition for Nevada on its own border with Colorado and Arizona. Although I know Colorado, I don't think shares border with Nevada, but
of course,
you know, there's now huge markets very close to Las Vegas encroaching on, you know, Denver and Phoenix that have, you know, millions of people and mobile betting, and they're offering stuff that's not available in Vegas, but is still, you know, LA to Denver, LA to Phoenix by plane is not very much different than LA to Las Vegas, you know? So you could be in a legal betting state with a market, you know, with betting options, just not even 2-3 times the size of Nevada, but exponentially just massively larger than Nevada. And I think that's been exciting because there's all sorts of places, Mississippi, New Jersey, you know, all via direct flights. In Mississippi, you have to change planes once in Houston or whatever, But you can go to all these different places with, you know, multiple books that will take, you know, not necessarily like, you know, the biggest action in the world from anybody. But I mean, you want to get $500 down on props on something, you can go to four or five different books in some of these different states and get it. So that's kind of cool that the markets have opened up, and I expect that's going to eventually leak into California in the coming years. But yeah, I mean, it's mostly business as usual. The competition from the offshore is more or less the same as it was before, just more legal options.
I'm glad you brought up how there's multiple options and you can get less down in more opportunities. Because one thing I think that isn't, there's this gap between what we're getting from professional bettors and wise bettors in the content that we consume and the reality of what people are actually experiencing and what the average, even rec plus bettor is doing, right? We hear all of these horrible stories about bettors being limited and such, when, I mean, the percentage of bettors that are betting enough and well enough and winning enough for that to be the case is a lot smaller than gambling Twitter would lead you to believe. And while of course you want to be able to get the best of the number every time for as much as you can get, as much as you want to get down on it, I mean, so I guess maybe I'm wondering, would you support the idea of, instead of pounding, I don't know, 1,000 on a line at, I don't know, plus 150, splitting that bet and taking plus 150 somewhere, then taking like plus 143 elsewhere, fair line was plus 140 or plus 138, where you're still getting the best of the number in both situations, but you're not completely pounding one out and triggering them to want to limit you.
Well, that's sort of one of the things, the more advanced you get and the longer you do gambling, like keeping and maintaining strong outs is, you know, a skill itself. And you can either burn through them consistently or you know what sort of action you can give to where. So, I mean, that really just falls under the sort of understanding, you know, what you're doing and what you're trying to accomplish. If you just want to bust a guy out or piss off a book somewhere, yeah, just hit him for the, you know, the best number on some game they're not paying attention to, and you know they'll pay it and they'll take it, and they'll probably, you know, you won't be surprised if, you know, you find your account limited or they don't want your action. But it also helps, I mean, like the same thing, your situation, your hypothetical, like $1,000, like what if you have 10 accounts and, you know, they're all 10 credit accounts, so you split it up $100 on all those 10 accounts, you know, and you have settle up figures with all these guys, it's sort of like a fractional reserve banking thing where you know what you can lose and spread it across counts. Like, you know, it's fine. And it's not, the goal is not to lose, but the goal is not to pay when you lose, when right. You're gambling on credit, is to lose, you know, you don't want to lose too much. So if you understand what you're doing and you can structure your bets across counts, you know, it's really all your own bookkeeping. And then that gets into how you want to pull the money out. You know, if you're winning $1,000, $100 at a time across 10 accounts, you're not going to see that money, versus if you put that $1,000 on one book and you post it up at DraftKings or FanDuel, and you know they'll pay you out the same night in cash, whatever. Those are all just sort of the things that the more sophisticated you get, you consider on a daily basis on, you know, what you're trying to accomplish, what you're betting, what your goals are.
Yeah. Let's talk about sports betting content, because I want to make sure we have enough time to talk about this, because I think it's an interesting topic and one that I think deserves more discussion. The legalization of sports betting led to every sports betting or every sports outlet trying to incorporate betting, trying to either create betting specific platforms or weave betting talk into their normal sports talk. And it has led, of course, to personalities, whether they're known as bettors or not, to make picks. And so many of them will like make picks without even telling you like what price they like, right? Like, oh, I like, you know, like I like X team or Y fighter or whatever. And they don't even tell you at what price, what number, anything. I mean, at what point is there some accountability, do you think, that needs to be had? Do you think we'll ever see actual accountability of this other than public court, right? Other than the public saying what you're doing isn't transparent. Do you think we'll get to a point, especially as we're trying to guard people from problem gambling, and there's this advertising, you know, debacle going on how much are they advertising too much? Do you think we'll ever get to a point where some sort of entity, some sort of ruling fashion, whether it's the companies themselves or otherwise, actually tries to keep these personalities accountable for what they choose? And I don't know exactly how that would look like. I guess I'm trying to leave that as open-ended as I can.
I think that's to hold them accountable, sort of impractical, other than, you know, losing your job if you just do too bad of a job. But I mean, I think a lot of it just comes down to there's when you have so much time to fill with, you know, especially on air content, there's just so much time to fill. There's not necessarily 12 hours or 24 hours worth of discussing gambling stuff in a day, you know, without getting into mundane and sort of sports talk kind of stuff. So I think with the rush to fill airtime and, you know, page space or web space, whatever, you know, there are sort of trade-offs that people make between quality and quantity. And, you know, like if you want somebody to write game previews for every game for the NFL for a whole slate, like you'll get game previews for every slate, but there might only be two or three games worth betting that weekend, you know, like, but right, you're going to have to write stuff up and you're going to have to come up with an angle for each game to get the page views sort of thing. So you have to have people that want to do that work. And, you know, a lot of times the people that are capable of writing the best game summaries and telling you the stuff, like the stuff to look for, are already making more money not telling you that stuff. So, you know, it's not you're left with lower quality talent necessarily, but, you know, you're left with the people, you know, the people who bet the most don't necessarily write the most, and you can't expect them to either. You can't expect anyone to just give away their secrets. So, you know, it's just kind of tough.
Do you think, and I'm an extrovert, so I process things as I say them. So I think I'm getting closer to maybe what I'm asking. Let's say whoever on Fox is like, oh, I like, you know, they actually talk about the lines. They're not just picking a win or anything. They actually talk about lines where it's clear that they're talking about something from a betting angle. Should there be some sort of obligation or some sort of disclaimer that this person doesn't actually wager money on this? Like, I think
if there's not a disclaimer yet, there probably will be in the future at some point. I think a lot of these things are just, until somebody does it, there's no policy kind of thing. And it'll all end up getting worked into place as legalization is more common. We're so early in this game that a lot of these policies and stuff haven't sort of been developed yet. But specifically with the advertising, I mean, you've seen it in other industries like cigarettes. Like, you used to be able to advertise cigarettes on TV. And now the idea of, like, you know, a guy like smoking on TV and telling you, like, yeah, go smoke cigarettes is insane. Like, nobody would, you know, nobody would believe you that you could do that. But you can have a guy on TV like, I won, you know, $5 million on Daily Fantasy. And there's some small print in the bottom that says, no, he didn't. But, you know, otherwise, it's just totally normal. And we're you know, like when you get online ads, like, I don't know what ads you get, but like sometimes I get like weird ads for like ketamine therapy and stuff. And I'm just like, wow, that's legal. Like, you could just advertise that now. I mean, you could do anything on the internet, but yeah. It's the same thing with gambling. Like, you could just sign up. Here's a deposit bonus. Like, we're going to give you money and get you hooked on gambling. Like, it's crazy to me because eventually these things have effects on society, and they don't necessarily like they're not noticeable, you know, on like you're not going to see it on like a credit report or anything, but you create more problem gambling with stuff like this. It's just a matter of fact. And they know the statistics that, you know, the amount of people that sign up is going to create X number of problem gamblers. Like, they know this stuff from previous, you know, tranches of data they have. So, you know, you're going to create more gambling addicts in your community, which means sucking more money out of local economies and, you know, kids don't get their soccer team dues and all sorts of stuff as effects long term. But people don't really see it that way with how legalized gambling affects communities. And I think it's terrible because it also legalized gambling doesn't necessarily reinvest in the local communities either.
Right.
Which I think is sort of a problem with gambling itself. Like, at least theoretically, like the California State Lottery goes to schools or whatever. These things all, they create tax revenue, but they just suck money out. They don't take, you know, the winners are so few. If it's like 1% of people winning, you're just sucking money out of state economies and local economies, which I think people will eventually notice. But the advertising stuff will be curtailed one way or another. It will happen, just like it happened with cigarettes and, you know, other types of commercials on TV. It's just a matter of time, and it's just a matter of sort of the events that lead up to it. But the way operators are acting, like the idea that operators are going to police themselves is not realistic.
Yeah. I know that you have to go soon so you can record your podcast, and I want to wrap up with that, the wide world of Weingarten. I really appreciate this podcast. I actually, it's one of the few things that I choose to take. I don't know why, but I choose to take over YouTube versus a podcast. I don't know why watching someone talk is more interesting to me than listening to someone talk. But one thing I really enjoy about this is you just almost go through a list of what you've bet and kind of maybe give a reason why or not, or a way that you're looking. What made you decide on this format of just sort of, here's what's an e-count?
I'd been discussing with VEASAN for a while doing my own podcast and how to do it. And it's just tough because I do it by myself. I do it from my place. And like when I'm on with Gil's so good at what he does. Like he's one of the best, and it's so hard. I don't think people really appreciate how hard it is to host a show.
Yep.
Where you have to, you know, convey the information, and you have to question guests and discuss things with guests and be interesting. When you're doing stuff by yourself, it has its own set of challenges because you don't have anybody to sort of work off of. You don't like Gil. I talk to Gil normally in real life, so like he knows what I'm thinking, he knows what I bet, he knows, you know, he knows how to ask me questions. So I kind of had to work on the format myself. And that's just sort of so far what I've gotten, you know, just the structure. Because I generally what I do is I create an outline of the things, the stories, topics I want to talk about, things that happened the day before. Right now I'm recording like 3-4 days a week. When baseball happens, I'll be recording 5 if not 6 days a week because there's so much to talk about. But so like I'll take, you know, they're like they'll be just be like a Wednesday or a Friday or something. I'm just have nothing to really talk about right now, or I've just already said everything there is to say, and I can't go over the MVP market 5 days a week. I can do that once or twice, but nobody wants to tune in and hear me say, well, Aaron Rodgers was 400 yesterday, Aaron Rodgers is minus 400 today, and nothing's changed from Monday or Tuesday. So, you know, I try to come up with an outline of interesting topics, and there's always so much to talk about, but typically I run through the markets I'm betting and the stuff I'm betting, the news I'm reading, and I'll tell you like just stuff I'm seeing in the news that's, you know, slightly the way I'm seeing it versus what I'm reading. And, you know, I just go through everything there is, and, you know, it'll be better when baseball starts. And I do also plan on eventually having some guests. I haven't done anything with guests yet. But it's mostly because the show is called The Wide World of Weingarten. So when I do have guests, I'm interested in guests, you know, who have more things. Like, I don't want to have somebody on and just be like, hey, what's your picks for, you know, the weekend this weekend? There's already like 17 right. podcasts like that. And I can go on those podcasts. I can have those people on my podcast, but I'm more interested in, you know, like Chris Andrews, for example, the bookmaker. Yes. at South Point, like he's an example of a guy I'd like to have on my show, but I don't want to ask him so much about what it's like being a bookmaker at South Point. I want to ask him more what it's like having two books published, you know, in the gambling world. Yeah. Because I think a lot of people would be interested in the process of, you know, producing a manuscript and getting it published and how that works, as opposed to, you know, Chris, you know, what's it like being a bookmaker? I know you've told this story 17 times. Tell me the same story. So I have a whole list of people that I'm interested in for the topics that I'm interested in them talking about that'll hopefully start being done sooner than later. But mostly I'm just waiting for baseball to start to really crank it up to baseball stuff.
Yeah, very good. Well, I'm looking forward to it. I enjoy it. I don't get a chance to take it in every time it's put out, but when I'm doing my own handicapping, sometimes I'll throw some audio in the background. And if there's a new episode of Wide World of Weingarten, it hits my speakers. Jason, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. I'm so, you know, when I was starting to map out the next couple months and I was like, oh, who could I have on? And then you had tweeted something and I was like, how have I not asked Jason yet? So I'm glad we finally made this work. I enjoy your podcast. I enjoy your spots on Gil's show. It's a lot of fun taking you in. And I can honestly say, not to toot your horn too much, but I can honestly say I'm a better gambler because I take in your thoughts.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate hearing that. I get a lot of comments from people on Twitter and DMs and stuff. And usually it's people saying, thanks, you know, appreciate something you did. And it's nice because I do like helping people. So, you know, and that's one of the things when I started doing stuff with VSiN, when I told them I wanted to do a podcast, as I said, I wanted to, you know, have a show that helps people get better at betting and teaches them, you know, tools they need to be better bettors if they plan on doing this, as opposed to just tune in and I'll tell you that I like the Rams. You know, I'll try to tell you why I like the Rams.
Yeah. I think if you want a specific example, one thing I know I'm better at, and I know that you have contributed to this way, I think I feel more comfortable and confident in taking long shot odds in futures markets. That's that's something. It's so going back to hurdles of becoming a better. That is something that I struggled with for years, right? Taking something that was more than 20-1 odds just seems so almost foolish, to be honest. Like when you don't think about it, when you don't put critical thinking in it, it can almost seem foolish. But then I started making, you know, I just cashed a 66-1 on Lille to win Ligue 1 last year. And a lot of that, your confidence came from people like you making me realize that no, when this, you know, you take enough of these shots, you're going to come ahead when you know what you're doing.
Yeah, that I learned actually, that was a financial thing from Michael Milken, from his junk bond trading theory that a portfolio of junk bonds outperforms stocks over the long term. I basically applied it to a portfolio of long shot futures will return, you know, if, you know, not necessarily, you'll do all right. You're not, you know, you have to be willing to lose. You know, you bet something at 100-1, it's going to lose.
Right.
You're going to say, well, it was 100-1. Of course it was going to lose, but you're going to hit enough of them. You're going to hit more than 1 out of 100 if you bet them correctly. And you understand, you know, it's sort of fat tails and stuff that a lot of stuff on the fringes is not priced correctly. And Kansas City not to score a touchdown, sort of, well, they're, until they don't, you know, until
right.
every, you don't realize how often, like go back and look at every NFL week and see how often that team doesn't score a touchdown. It almost happens weekly, but you don't realize that each one of those is 50-1 or whatever, you know, but we don't think like that.
It's funny, you know, I'll mention long shots that I like or that I'm looking at, and someone will be like, come on, that's not going to happen. And then I'll be like, would you really be surprised if, and I like name a couple game states and be like, well, I guess not. Well, then it's really not that crazy of a bet, is it? Right? Like if it's not too difficult for you to like to, you know, for you to imagine a couple of these games going a certain way, then maybe this isn't as wild as a bet as it originally seemed.
I really like that in soccer. Like there was recently a last year's City game versus somebody, was it Liverpool or something, where the total was like 4.5. Leicester won 1-0. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
And it's like, well, it's a soccer game. How many different outcomes are there? It could be 0-0. It could be 1-0. Yo, like, was that really that improbable of an outcome? Because that was 100-1 before the game or whatever. And people, how did you not bet? How did you not think of that? You know, people don't think about those things until after they happen. And they say, oh, well, that was, you know, you don't realize how often long shot things happen. Like the Chiefs game last night, Gabe Davis to score 3 touchdowns was probably 200-1, 150-1, you know, huge price, but you know, you don't realize how often things like that happen. Kendall Blanton scored the first touchdown in the Rams game, 80-1. You know,
yeah.
Any game you look at, you can find something that happened that you probably weren't thinking of.
Jason, I hope that this is not the last time you'll be on the Better Life. Maybe the next time we can link up in person and get another conversation going.
Definitely. This was a lot of fun.
Very good. Jason, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you for having me.
Great to finally have Jason on. Not much else here for the monologue. I'm in a transition in life, in my personal life, a good transition, but one that definitely is taking some time. I am just wrapping up a Vegas trip, and of course, we all know Vegas can be distracting, so which is why this is coming out on a Saturday. Appreciate everybody's patience. Next couple weeks, of course, will include Better Viewing in its new feed. That is, I've created the feed and everything. I just need to make sure that it's live in pot in the. I need to make sure it's live and available for people to get before I put out that information. And then I'm still locking down next week's interview, but got a good lineup drafted so far for the month of February. So looking forward to the next handful of episodes. The only trip that I have on the book so far is Biloxi with Mississippi Rob and the rest, March 31st through April 4th. I intend on being there. I will be at Beau Rivage. I will be sort of hanging out in all of the items that Mississippi Rob detailed in his Twitter. If you go to Mississippi Rob 4 on Twitter, you will see, I believe it's his pinned post. He has information on sort of tentatively what we plan on doing for those few days in Biloxi, and I intend on just sort of being there for all of that. So come hang out with us in Biloxi. It's a lot of fun. I love Biloxi. I can't wait to get back. I don't know when I'll be back in Vegas, but next week I'll tell you a little bit more about how my trip went. It wasn't great. It wasn't bad, but it wasn't great. But more on that later. There will be my cliffhanger. Hope everybody is doing well with good luck with all your bets this weekend. If you got action, I got Ozuma over 34.5 receiving yards. That's the bet that I have in the Bengals-Chiefs games. Hope everybody's well. On behalf of Jason Weingarten, I am Timothy Lawson. Good night and good luck.